Good morning, Rabbi Isai, welcome back. And we were discussing the halachas which pertain now between Lag BaOmer and Shavuos in the concept of Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag. So the next event that's going to happen in the Jewish calendar, besides the fact that every day is a special day, but the next event in the Jewish calendar which is going to happen is today, 1 week, Kof Ches Iyar. Chof Ches Iyar, according to Megillas Tanis, Chof Ches Iyar was a Yom of Tanis Sadikim. And the reason for that was because Shaboy Bayom Meis Shmuel Hanovi. Shmuel Hanovi, it's the Yortzeit of Shmuel Hanovi, today 1 week, next Friday, Erev Shabbos. And it says there that there are a lot of people who go up to his kever. Harbe Me'adas HaSfardim. The Sfardim have a minig, Noegin Nisfala Bayom Ze Al Kivroi. That they go to his kever, and Va'al kever Elkanah Oviv. His father was called Elkanah, and I haven't been there. I have actually been to the kever of Shmuel Hanovi. It's just outside Yerushalayim. Yeah. But is Elkanah his father buried next to him? I don't know. And it says, and also Imoy, his mother, who was Chana, that we know. It says that they're all buried together in one ma'ora, and the Sfaradim have a minhag that on Chof Ches Iyar, which is the Yortzeit of Shmuel Hanovi, that they go up to this kever, to this ma'ora, and they're davened by the kever of Shmuel, his father Elkanah, his mother Chana, and his two sons. What are the names of the two sons of Shmuel Hanovi? Anybody? No, we don't know Nach. I mean, I didn't know either. The names of the two sons of Shmuel Hanovi, anybody? Anyway, so I immediately thought Chofni and Pinchas, but that's wrong. That's Eli HaKoyen. That was Eli HaKoyen. Anyway, their names were, I looked at Yoel and Avio. Yoel and Avio, and they themselves were leaders in Klal Yisrael after Shmuel Hanovi. And so his Yortzeit is on Chof Ches, and there was a Minig, and we'll try to remember B'li Neder next Friday to mention the Yortzeit of Shmuel Hanovi.
Started at Torreway, Northwest London, Friday, Kaf Aleph Iyar, 8th of May. Rabbi Shlomo Landau Shlita, North American Director of Olami Mentors in Lakewood. Parsha theme. This week's Torah has been sponsored by Family Wiesenfeld and Nishmas of Ephraim Fisher, Meraviol Aryeh Zichron Lebrocha. The official Dick Zichron Lebrocha of Antwerp. The Ziyatzeit is today. And anonymously, Ruf Shlomo of Lebnachem Moshe Ben Chaya Sora and Shlomo Ben Bela. And the Nishmas, our esteemed founder. Yosef Dov Ben Shem Michal Tzvi Itkavitz Zichrono Livracha.
Good morning, everybody, and I also have to start with my Hakar Satayif to my dear Chaver Abdudi Zichrono Livracha. The first time that I spoke at Torahway, actually didn't come through him. It came through my cousin, Shmuley Kruskal. And Dudi happened to have been there. He wanted to see what's this American guy about. And like they say in Hebrew, Nidlak Acharav, he was like very excited by my, guess what I shared? He's like, when are you going back to the United States? I said, I have to catch a flight at 1 p.m. He says, perfect. You could speak at least three places before then. I said, how is that going to work? So basically, he got me into his car. And he started driving me to here and driving me to there. And by the time I finished speaking at Parda's house for the boys, my flight was leaving not too long after that. And I said, what are we going to do? How are we going to make the flight? He goes, don't worry. And I don't think I ever drove quicker or on more sidewalks to the airport in one ride. But we made it on time, Baruch Hashem, with Siyata D'Shemaya. I made it onto the flight. And after that point, we stayed in touch and became very close. And I must mention something which is incredible hashgacha. I have a son, my oldest son, who learns in Kailal. He lives in a city called Riverdale. It's in the Bronx, outside of Manhattan. And there's a hospital there in Riverdale, and somebody told him that there's a frum guy who's in there in the hospital. He's even by himself for Shabbos. Maybe some of the younger like could go to visit. So my son's a tzaddik. He's like his mother. And he goes, and he takes his friend, and they go to visit. The seed, as Siyata D'Shemaya would have it, it was Dudi. And at some point, he says, what's your name? He says, my name is Yisachar Landau. He goes, any relationship to Reb Shlomo Landau? He says, yeah, how would you know? He goes, Bez Chaverim, we're very good friends. It was my son. And my son became very close to him, went many, many times to the hospital. And I feel like it was Siyata D'Shemaya. You know, Dudi always was trying to connect people. And Baruch Hashem brought us all together. So the Torah that we get from this, the short words that I want to share, B'siyata D'Shemaya, should be L'Iloi Nishmasa. I cannot think of a better parsha for Torah way. Correct? This week's parsha, B'chukoisai Teilechu. If you go in the Torah's ways, is that not what parsha's B'chukoisai is? B'chukoisai Teilechu. So Rashi teaches us, B'chukoisai Teilechu, perhaps one of the most famous Rashis in Kol HaTorah Kula, says Rashi, what does it mean that you should walk in Hashem's statutes? B'chukoisai Teilechu. Zok Rashi, She'tiyu Amelim B'Torah. That a person should toil in Torah. As a Bachar Lurton tells Yeshiva, I will never be able to disconnect the powerful words of passion of the Rosh Hashiva, Ramat Chagifta Zecharon Levracha, speaking about toiling in Torah. Amelus B'Torah, he would roar. This was his life, this was his motto. He once shared with me in a candid moment that the yeshiva's machzer, it takes 7 years for the yeshiva to complete the entire cycle of learning. In those days, we didn't just learn yeshiva shemesechtas, we learned chulin and psachim and shavuos, all kinds of breadth and depth. And Rav Gifter gave shir for 49 years, so seven cycles. Seven times seven, 49 years. He told me that he kept copious notes of all of his shiurim, but he never ever looked back on them. They'd be learning Maseches Yevamos the seventh time. And it's easier, obviously, for Magid Shir to also. What did I say last time? He said, Tzigefelt in Amelas B'Torah. It lacked in his commitment, in his toil to Torah, and he would not look at his previous notes. That's Amelas B'Torah. That's a person who toils in Torah and someone that puts it all out there. Okay, let's say a story. My grandfather says, it should be Gazunt Le Amedrish Eker El Amaisa. Here's a beautiful story about Amelas B'Torah. So, in 1994, in a shul in Carmiel, in Bet HaKnesset HaMerkazi, the central synagogue in Carmiel, it's Friday night, Kabbalah Shabbos, and the Rav gets up to speak between Kabbalah Shabbos and between Ma'ariv Kedarkam B'Kodesh. The Rav in my shul one time told me that he speaks between Kabbalah Shabbos and Ma'ariv, not because he's looking to share Divrei Torah. Of course, that's good, because if he has someone in the shul who had a very tiring week, he's going to come into the Shabbos Suda, he's going to nod off after Kiddush, or maybe his face will fall into the gefilte fish. He says, I hope that guy gets a 15-20 minute nap. You know what I'm doing for a Shalom Bayis? That's worth more than 100 Divrei Torah. The Rav told this to me. And it's a big shul, and there's a lot of shluffers and a great Rav. V'ani b'seicham. Periodically. It's very hard to sleep through this Divrei Torah, but I've managed. Anyways, so 1994, this Yid walks into shul, and he walks in late. He looks a little disoriented. He doesn't look like one of the locals. And the Rav is speaking, and he finds a seat near the front of the shul. It's a little bit of a scene. He's not trying to make a scene. He's out of place. And they notice that he's scanning the bookshelves. The Rav's in the middle of the drasha. All of a sudden, he jumps out of his seat, runs over to the Talmud Bavli, to the Shasin, and he's scanning it. Ah, Maseches Yuma. He pulls a Yuma off the shelf. He's in front of everybody. He starts leafing through the Yuma, He gets the daf. He looks at it, filled with simcha, he begins to cry. And he goes back to his seat. After davening was over, he went over to the Rav and he said to him, in a beautiful Russian Yiddish, he says, Ich bete dir mechila. I'm asking you for forgiveness, he says. Ich weiß, I understand that I was mafsik your shir. Aber ich darf dir sagen, I have to tell you what was happening. He says, I just arrived today in Carmiel from Vitebsk. 65 years ago, the man said, 65 years ago, I was learning at a Rebbe who taught us Torah clandestinely. It was illegal to teach Torah. And I'm learning there with my Rebbe. I loved my Rebbe. He was an old man. He says, I'm going to tell you the truth. I was a good Talmud. The Rebbe loved me too. I was that Talmud that always asked the Kasha, that gave a good teretz. We're in the middle of learning a difficult sugya. And all of a sudden, I asked the Kasha. And the Rebbe's face lit up. What a Kasha. A doozer. And at that moment, there was a strong banging on the door. And the NKVD, Yimach Shemam B'Zichram, the secret police came. They raided our little shir, and they took my Rebbe away. And I was broken. And as they're taking the Rebbe away, the Rebbe says, Yuma da peva v'mad alpha, whatever. That's where your teretz is. And they took him off and we never heard from him again. He says, for 65 years, I never had an opportunity to open a Gemara Maseches Yuma. And the kasha has been sitting inside of me and percolating. I arrived today from Vitebsk. I came to the shul. This is where I found it. This is the shul I found. I walked in there. I said, Maseches Yuma, how could I forget it? I walked over to the bookshelf. I pulled out a Gemara Maseches Yuma. And after 65 years, I finally got an answer to my shayla. That's Shatiyu Amelam Batayr. 65 years, the kasha gave him no rest. And one can only imagine the simcha and the shavas ha-nefesh that filled him after 65 years of yearning to learn pshat and b'chukoysai teilechu shetihiyu amelim batayr. When we make a siyum on a mesechta, we say something so inspiring and uplifting. We say, anu amelim u'mekablim sachar ve'heim amelim ve'ena mekablim sachar. Like the Chofetz Chaim used to explain, if you go and you get a custom-made suit, I'm sure in England they don't have that shtus yet, but in America we do. Bespokery. I don't even know what that means, but it has something to do with paying a lot of money and feeling chashuv. And you go into a custom-made suit and the guy measures you from head to toe and he comes back and you try it on and one sleeve is too long and one sleeve is too short and one button buttons and the other doesn't button. And the guy says, okay, that will be $500, $600, $700, $1,000. But it doesn't fit me. He goes, I know, but I put in the effort. Rabir, get yourself a different job. Maybe become a plumber. Right? They have plumbers in England. It's only America. Oh, they have plumbers. Anyways. And nothing. You don't get the reward for it. Zach, the Heilige Chafetz Chaim, but he opens up a Gemara. And he comes across a Tosfos. And Maseches Yevamos. And it's a difficult Tosfos. It's a really hard Tosfos. That Amud over there where there's just a little bit of Gemara. If you're learning Amud Yomi or you're learning the rice, like, ah. Then you look at Tosfos, you take a glance at Tosfos, and it's overwhelming. And you try to chap that Tosfos, it doesn't go. The tailor, the bespokery guy, doesn't get any schar. Just for the amelis, for trying to understand that we are mekabel sachar. And the Baalei Machshava say something so beautiful. We all know that as children, as bachrim, probably as parents, we learned the Gemara Maseches Baba Metzia. In Eilu Metzias, the Gemara says, it brings the Pasuk, Vaisira Eshar Achicha Yaseya Nidachim. Don't see the Sher or the Shar, the sheep or the cow, your sedan or your SUV lost, Nidachim, Visalamtomayim, and then just look away. Hashiv Teshivim Leachicha. Give them back. Return the mitzvah Shavas Aveda. And the Pasuk continues to elaborate, Vichaitas Lechamayri, so shall you do to his donkey, his pickup truck. V'chein ta'ase l'simlosai, so shall you do to his custom-made suit. V'chein ta'ase l'chol avedas achicha, and so shall you do to all the lost objects. Asher toivan, mimenu mitzasa loisucha lehisalim. Freg di gibar meseches baba mitzia. Why does the Torah delineate all these examples? Se, Salma, why all the different ones? And the Gemara goes through back and forth. If you go through the whole Gemara, when it comes to the se, the sheep, the Gemara never is miyashiv, and never resolves why the word seh is there. It's extra. And for almost 2,000 years, Klal Yisrael has been learning this. Children and bachrim, balabatim and retirees, everyone's been learning this Gemara. You finish the Gemara and you don't know why the word seh is there. How unfulfilling. No, it's totally fulfilled. You put in that, you don't need the answer. You just get schar for the amelos batar. Say the Baalei Musar beautifully. As a pasuk in Tehillim Shteit and Tehillim David HaMelech says, Ta'isi kiseh oived. I have wandered like a seh oived, like a lost sheep. Bakesh avdecha. Your servant seeks you out. Zog David HaMelech, seh oived. I'm lost when it comes to seh. I don't know what the pshat is. I learned the Gemara Baba Metzia Kaviyacha like everybody else. And I don't know the pshat. However, mitzvah secha lo shachachti, Rabbanu Shalom, I have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And that mitzvah of Talmud Torah, b'chukai satei lechu yishetiu ha-melem ha-Torah. So even if I'm kiseh ha-Oved, even if I'm ta'isi kiseh ha-Oved, I don't know pshat, I'm in a good spot. Ki mitzvah secha lo shachachti. And that's the David HaMelech who has the right to say that when a Yiddish person says to Hillim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give him schar like he's learning Nigoyim and Ahalas. I once ate by Chassid HaShayid, I'm the Chayver Abloin Sanhedria, many, many moons ago, before most of you were born, and, not really, and And the Yid asked, what does it mean that David HaMelech says that it should be as if I said Negaim, and also he explained Negaim. What is Negaim? It's Tzaraath. He says, think about the following scenario. You have a Yid. One day he speaks a geschmack, a juicy shtickle of Lashon Hara. That Lashon Hara is so juicy, has no calories, has fulfilling Nebuch in a bad way. And you speak it, and all of a sudden, next morning, you're putting on your tefillin and you see it. It's there, the little shtickel tzaraas on your hand. So what do? To go to the Kohen, right? The problem is, in your town, the Kohen's in Am Ha'aretz. Doesn't know Hilchas Negaim. Who knows Negaim, right? I'm not going to ask a personal question here. How many people here have learned Mishnayos Negaim? Let's just put it out there. Oh, many times, right? Anyways, that's what I say. If you learn Nega, you get Oineg, right? Same letters. So, he doesn't know what to do. So what does he do? He goes to the Rav. He says, I need some backup here. We need some backup forces. I could take a look at it, but I have no idea what's going on here. The Rav says, okay, I'll come along with you. The Rav looks at it. The Rav tells him, it's a Mishnah, the Rambam, whatever. Hilchas Negaim. Then what does the Kohen say? Tame. One word. Tahar. One word. And what's behind that one word? The Rav's entire yeda, his entire knowledge of all of Hilchas Negaim, some of the most complex of Negaim. Zog David HaMelech, that if a Yiddish person opens up and says a kapitel of Tehillim, a small chapter of Tehillim, it should be like Negaim. It should be like that Kohen who really doesn't know the background. He says one word and it's a whole world behind that one word. Zog David HaMelech, you know what I put into Tehillim? You know what I understood when I wrote a pasuk of Ta'isi Kiseh Oivid? You know how many machshavas I had? And a yid, a little yid, in a corner of some shul somewhere, reads this pasuk. So David HaMelech, oh, my kavanah should be there. Even this pshatim, these exotic pshatim, like Ta'isi Kiseh Oivid. I want to share with you a personal maisa. Didn't happen to me, but it happened to one of my dear chaverim, very dear chaver. We speak at least once a week, usually more often than that. This chaver of mine syndicates real estate deals. I'm going to be honest and a little vulnerable. I don't know what syndicate means, but it sounds good. He syndicates real estate deals. And him and his chaver, he has three partners actually, they had purchased a particular piece of property, which they thought they can make some money off of that piece of property. He tried to explain to me how I'll stick to Negaim and Alis. He'll stick to syndication of real estate, although he happens to be a Talmid Chacham as well. So he says that for some reason, they couldn't unload this piece of property. In the contract, it basically said they had to come up with the funds, sell it, syndicate it by a certain date, or they could lose the entire $1 million. Each one of these four partners were in for $250,000. And they just couldn't hustle it, they couldn't flip it, it wasn't working. So what do? They meet with the owner, and they said to the owner, listen, we need an extension here. We need just a few more days. We're actually working on something. Something is percolating. Give us a few more days. Guess says, I'll make you a deal. For another $250,000, I'll give you till Monday. And they did the risk. Listen, it's four guys. The risk is spread a little bit thinner. And they're like, okay. They had a potential group in Los Angeles that was interested in the piece of property, and a meeting set up on Sunday afternoon with this group. They're going to go there, say a lot of tefillahs, promise Hashem whatever they're going to promise him. And the hope is that by the time they walk out of that meeting, they have a potential buyer, and at least they're able to unload it and even maybe make some money. Most incredible thing happens. Most amazing thing happens. They call my friend up, my chaver up. They tell him, you got to come with us to this meeting in Los Angeles. This guy has roots. His family's from Los Angeles originally. Dalem knows you. The investors know you. You bring credibility to the table. I would love to come. I have a chavrusa on Sundays. I have a chavrusa. I'm not available. Like, okay, you'll learn with your chavrusa 50 weeks out of the year. And this one Sunday, you'll be our chavrusa. Because I'm sorry, it's not negotiable. So Yichap, we stand to lose $1.25 million because of your chavrusa. He says, you three guys are all talented people. I'm not going to be the one that's going to sway it one way or the other. Do it without me. So what do you mean? You're the Los Angeles guy. They tried. Ein kol ve'ein einay. He says, I'm sorry. My chavrusa is my priority. They fly off to Los Angeles for an afternoon meeting, a late lunch meeting with these chevra, and he has his chevrusa set up. He walks into Shachris that morning. At the Shachris, a particular yid comes over to him and says to him, do you have any deals on the back burner? You've got to have a deal. He explains a little bit more about the deals. He says, I have a guy for you. Rabbi said, by the time the meeting happened in Los Angeles, it was all window dressing. There was no real reason to have that meeting. The deal was basically done. With him having his chavrusa. When he saw Duritzayna Shamakam, Malach Lanasas Al Yedei Acherim, this guy had his chavrusa. And B'chokoy Sai Teilechu Shatiyu Amelim Ba'Torah, what does the Torah promise afterwards? V'nosati Gishmecha Be'itam, V'arts Titein Yevula. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes things work out in the most beautiful way possible. I want to point out that Amelis Ba'Torah doesn't just mean quantitatively. You sit there and you hustle. It means that your hustle is Limud HaTorah. Right? It's a big thing in the world today. What's your hustle? I don't know if they say that in England, but in America. It's my hustle. I have a side hustle. I have two sides. My wife has a side hustle. What's your hustle? Is your hustle Torah? Then you get the bracha that follows. Do you learn Torah? Okay, that also creates some level of bracha. That's what it means. Shatiyu Amelim Ba'Torah. What's your hustle? I remember as a bachur learning in Tel's Yeshiva, I must have been 16 or 17 years old, there was a yid that came from Eretz Yisrael with his wife. She needed very, very serious heart surgery at the Cleveland Clinic, the gold standard for heart care in the world. See, it was a tremendous masmid. I know his name. I'm not going to say it because I didn't ask Rishus. And I remember he closeted himself in the Tel's Yeshiva to learn. That's what he did the whole time. He spent time with his wife. He did that. But whatever, he wasn't there, he was in the yeshiva learning. Yoyimam balayla, layish baisuk, mamish learned, day and night. The day of the surgery, she's supposed to go into surgery, I don't know, 10 o'clock, whatever it is. Right after Shacharis is over, he comes down to me. He used to learn the Ezes Nashim upstairs, comes down to the Oitzer Svarim, and he says to me, I'm not going to be in the hospital when my wife has the surgery. She's maskim. We said our goodbyes. I wish her hatzlacha. I'm going to be learning in the Ezes Nashim. If there's anything I need to know, is it okay if they call you to the payphone? I know I'm dating myself. And you'll be able to come to me and tell me if I need to know anything, hof l'toiv and l'ra. He says, for my wife, the best thing I could do is to learn Bertzifas. Is to just learn straight. And for 6 hours, the guy didn't put his head out of his gemara. Superhuman. And it wasn't like he didn't care about his wife. He cared about his wife very deeply. But he chapped that B'chukai Sa Teilechu is the best school that's out there. More than Perek Shira, more than 40 days of this or that. The best segula Yid has is B'chukai Sa Teilechu. By the way, Ramat Tzio Salman one time told me, people come to him all the time, they ask him for segula, for shidduchim, for shalom bayis, for nachas of children. He didn't say Amel Spatar. He says he only knows about one segula the Klai Yisrael has, and that segula is tried and true, and that's Tehillim. That's the only segula he ever recommended to people. A Yiddish person has a problem, he has a challenge, he has an issue, he opens up his sefer Tehillim. That's what he does. Okay. So that, in my life, I think back to Amel Sotar, that's one of the people. My Rebbe, Reb David Barker, Zichron Levrach, was my first year Beis Medrash Rebbe. He was the Talmud Mubuk of Rav Shach. Rav Shach once kissed him in the Beis Medrash. And somebody said to him, Allah and Shechon Arkin, I'll kiss someone in the Beis Medrash. He says, you're allowed to kiss the Sefer Torah. That's what Rav Shach said about this person. Reb David Barker would eat, drink, and sleep Limud HaTorah. He for sure dreamed Akasha, Rav Kivager's Kasha, which you, that's how this man was. He told me one time that he was learning in Panovich Yeshiva. And it was a chamsin that summer. It was a super hot summer. They didn't have air conditioning in the Beis Medrash at that period of time. So Panovich Rav saw the bachrim schwitzing away. So he decided to cool the oilim down. They were learning Yevamos that zman, and they switched the Limud to Sanhedrin. That's how they cooled himself down. That's Shatiyu Amelim Ba'Torah, which, by the way, the Panovich Rav's favorite Masechta was Sanhedrin. It's a well-known thing. He finally had his chance to get his Masechta. These people thought differently. And that's why the Panovich Rav, we all know, the bracha that followed the Panovich Rav everywhere that he went, was because of his amelis. Not just to learn Torah, but also to live Torah. Not just to live Torah, but also to teach Torah, to spread Torah. My Shashirav Gift used to always say, Ki hem chayenu v'arech amenu. There's Torah learning, and there's Torah living. Amelis b'Torah takes a person, and it transfers them, it transitions them from just Torah learning to Torah living. That's ki hem chayenu. I want to share with you a beautiful ma'aseh that's a yeshiva that used to be in Yerushalayim, called Yeshiva's Ner Yaakov, Hamechuna Ner Jake. And there's yeshiva, Rabbi Liff, a special person, many, many years ago, I think the story goes back, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, the yeshiva needed a new location. And the Rosh Yeshiva found a beautiful building. If I'm not mistaken, it was in Katamon. And during Ben Azmanim, he had people come in there and do shiputzim. They made the Beis Medrash better and the rooms. It was a great, great upgrade for the yeshiva. Literally, the week before the Zman, he gets a letter from the local municipality that some of the neighbors came. There's a zoning issue. You can't have yeshiva in a residential building. Doesn't know what to do. Yeshiva's starting next week. His bachim are coming from the United States and beyond. What's he going to do? hire a lawyer. The lawyer says, I'm just going to tell you that based on experiences, you're going to lose the court case. The municipality always sides with zoning. He didn't know what to do. He decided he's going to daven shachris early that morning by B'Shalem Zalman. He goes to B'Shalem Zalman Arbach, and he tells B'Shalem Zalman, I have a big court case. My bachrim, they're coming, the municipality, the lawyer. B'Shalem Zalman heard him out, and he says, Medav daven. We have to daven. Medav daven. He took it to heart. The whole way there, the court case, he davened his heart out. They come to the court case. Right away, his lawyer comes running over to him, and he says to him, Yesh tikva. There's hope. He says, why? The regular judge didn't show up today. Instead, there's a guy by the name of Elio Ben Zimra. That's the judge. He's wearing a kippah. If he's wearing a kippah, there's hope. The judge listens to both sides very carefully. And the judge turns to the prosecuting attorney. And he says to him, you live in Katamon? He says, no, he says, I do. He says, you know what was in this building the last 2 decades? Secular schools. And no one was paitze peo medaber. No one said anything. And now all of a sudden, there's a place that learns Torah and the neighbors are up in arms? That's not okay. He starts asking Rabbi Lift questions. How many bachim? Do you learn there? Do you daven there? Do you eat there? Are there shiurim? Are there schmoozing? And Rabbi Lift puts the whole thing out. The judge takes a recess for 2 hours. Rabbi Lift finishes God Sefer Tehillim in those 2 hours. The judge comes back and he says, I'd like to issue a psak din. I want to give a verdict. And he said like this. He says, what's a residential apartment building for? Living. You live in there. He says, every day in Tfilat Arvit, we say, Ki hem chayenu, ve'orech yamenu, uvahem nehege yomam valayla. He says, what does it say in the Navi? Ki beti bet tefilah yikare. When it comes to davening, it's my house. When it comes to living, it's my home. A yeshiva is a residence. Yeshiva is not an institution. It's a place where bachrim live in the highest level. And he issues a verdict that they could stay there. And by the way, this court case is cited until today as precedent in Israeli zoning laws that yeshivas are considered residents. They're not considered commercial properties. But that's not the end of the maisa. Because Rabbi Lift did something that many of us wouldn't even have thought about doing. He called Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. He needed to tell him what the verdict was. And one of the Ein Klach answers the phone. And he says, I was by the Zayda this morning, and I told him, I just want the Zayda to know, I want him to know that Baruch Hashem, everything worked out, and he tells him. And the Ein Klach says, ah, Baruch Hashem, the Zayda's been davening a whole day for Yad Tzlacha. And he chapped it when Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, Medav davenin. He didn't mean, du davs davenin. You have to daven. He said, we need to daven. Why is that? Because Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's kiyem chayenu, v'orech yamenu, was Klal Yisrael's learning. That's what it was. You learn, and when you learn, you become part of the people whose hustle is limra Torah. That's shetiyu amelim b'Torah. And their gedolei olam were the greatest of amelim. They were the people that put in the learning. And when it came to other people's amelim b'Torah, that was also something that was so chashuv. Just want to conclude with one thing. I have to make a joke because the British need to be lightened up a little bit. There's a couple that was having Shalom Bias issues. It's always a good place to make jokes about having Shalom Bias issues. And the fellow goes to the Rav and he says, "My Shalom Bias, I don't know, not much Shalom, not much Bias." Sephardi guy one time told me, if you want to have Shalom, buy it. If your wife wants something and you want Shalom, buy it. He said to me. So Rav says to him, listen, how often do you compliment your wife? He says, never. He says, you got to start complimenting your wife. So that night at the dinner table, he sits down to his wife and he says to him, my Akaris Abayis, my wonderful Eishes Chayil, you are the best wife from A to Z. So she says, A to Z, what are you talking about? A, you're attractive. B, you're beautiful. C, you're charming. D, you're delightful. E, you're excellent. F, you're fantastic. G, you're great. H, you're happy. She goes, and he stops. She goes, no, IJK? He goes, I'm just kidding. Why I'm asking this? Because if you think about it, if you look at the brachas in B'chukai Sa'i Teilechu, it sounds great. Geshmechem be'itam, safety, security, shalom ba'aretz, good shluf, shchaften ve'machret, great stuff. And then all the way at the end, what does the Rabbi Shalom say? IJK, kavayachol, v'loy sigal nafshi yascha. I won't be disgusted by you. I won't be rejected by you. What a bracha. I mean, that's a really nice bracha. It's like you said so many great things, kavayachol, Rabbi Shalom, and at the end you said, IJK, okay, I won't be disgusted by you. Imagine a couple that's sitting together and they're talking about 50 years of marriage, and at the end he goes, I'm telling you, my chashiva akeres habayis, the most chashiva attribute about you is that I was never disgusted by you. I don't know if we'll have another 50 years. So all the mafarshim, the Be'achad, asked this question. Rashi learns that the word goyel nefesh, when we say l'sigol nafshi, it doesn't push it away. It doesn't push it away. On a very, very pashat and a simple level, very simple level, there's two types of yidden in Klal Yisrael. Two types of frum, erlicha yidden in Klal Yisrael. There are yidden that try to fit Yiddishkeit into their lives, and there's yidden that try to fit their lives into Yiddishkeit. They're yidden that try to put Torah in their lives, and they're yidden that make sure that the rest of their life fits around their Torah. Like my chaver, the one who wouldn't travel to Los Angeles. Maybe v'leisigal nafshi yescha means that inside of you there isn't something that's pushing away the chavrusa. Ah, tonight I have a chasna, we don't have to learn. What it means, I'm oynus rachmana patre. Or you know what, tonight I'm running a little bit late, so I'm just going to learn the English on the art scroll. I'm not going to try to chap the Rashi. That's the difference between these two people. The Rebbe Hashem says the greatest bracha that a person could ever have is that nothing is pushing away the Yiddishkeit. All the bracha is there within the framework of a Yiddish person that you start with the first bookend, then the life that you live is totally different. The Yiddishkeit, the tefillah, the Torah, the chesed, the working on midos, it's not being pushed away, it's being embraced. And my bracha to each and every one of you is that the same way that we start our days with Torah, and it's a beautiful thing, it's the Torah way, the way to go, that b'chukaisai teilechu, that we should have all the brachas to follow subsequently. But most importantly, we should be the kli to understand and appreciate those brachas, b'shavas ha-nefesh. It's always a pleasure to come here. And if anyone's interested, I'm happy to help them try to facilitate Torah way in the United States so Yidden could actually start starting their day off that well. I want you to have a great Shabbos. Yashar koach for that.
As a chushev speaker concentrated on the chikoisai, so we can't leave Bahar to be desolate and completely, and therefore we'll just say a short thought on Parshas Bahar as well, which is the concept of Shmita, and it's described always as Giboyre Koyach Oise Devur, the mighty ones of strength who fulfill his words, and they are the ones which are the Shemu Shvius. People who literally close down a business for an entire year, if anybody can really imagine what it means to lock his establishment for 12 months, that's what they call sabbaticals, that's where it originates from. Not only loss of accounts, loss of business, but it's an expanded principle of Shabbos. If we know that one day a week we close down our business because the Rebbein Shalom says that we should keep Shabbos and we pick up our wine by Kiddush and we testify to the Rebbein Shalom, Yom HaShishi V'Achila Shemayim V'Uretz L'Chol Tzavuam, that we recognize that if we work 6 days then we can have Panusa, notwithstanding all the arguments that really Saturday is the main day of the week and that's where I make my main panusa from. But we see that people that work 6 days a week and the Rebbein Shalom helps them even though Shabbos they rest. So that's the idea of Shmita, which unquestionably inculcates trust in the Rebbein Shalom, recognizing where your panusa comes from. And in the case of Yovel, that you close down for 2 years and you make your field Hefker. Understanding this concept of Hefker, it means literally that you have closed down your business and you've also taken down the fences, you're allowing everybody into your field. In order to understand that, I just bring you a story which happened in Lodz. There was a roof there, the famous Rebbe Lurichaim Meisels, was the chief rabbi of Lodz, And there was a famous philanthropist, a wealthy man, gave lots of stukas. His name was Rav Kalman Poznansky. Story is written up in children's books, but it's a very meaningful story, because when he came to collect money for him, there were people which were absolutely frozen during the winter and had no ability to heat their homes, and they huddled in coats just literally to survive the cold of the winter. And he tried to collect money for fuel, for wood, in order for them to heat their houses. And he came to the door of Rav Poznansky, who had a beautiful mansion in Lodz. And when he opened the door, so he welcomed him in, Ruv Kimtaran, Rav Meisels. And he started to explain to him why he's coming. And he stood there, and it was in the middle of January, the winds were blowing, and poor Mr. Poznansky was standing in his shirt sleeves, and the winds were freezing. And so he says, Kimtaran. And he starts to explain to him that he came because of fuel and for... And as he's speaking to him, poor Mr. Poznansky's lips were already blue. And he says, Ruv Kimtaran. And he carries on and he's speaking to him about what he needs. Finally, when they said, Kimtaran, schreib auch schön a check. He went inside. He sat down, closed the front door, went into his warm study with a beautiful log fire burning, warm and cozy. He says to him, okay, so he gave him a really nice check. Why didn't you want to come in before? He says, well, I'll tell you the truth. I'm speaking to you about fuel. I'm speaking about people who are freezing. If we came into your warm study, you really would not appreciate it. When I saw your lips were blue with cold, then you really understood what it means to be cold. Now, in Shmita, that's essentially the message. The Ribbono Shel Olam sometimes allows the wealthy man to be on the other side of the fence. By removing his fence, he's actually giving that message to the poor man. Now we're both equal. You're taking Menehevke, I'm taking Menehevke. I have no ownership whatsoever, but I know what it feels like once to be the one who goes into his own field and he's got no balas, and he's got no balas. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants that of the person. 6 years, Mr. Shiny Yid, you're the one that distributes trimmer, mouser, etc., etc. Now this year, all of a sudden, you became a schnorr like the rest of them. There's a master that happened which is a similar idea. It's known that Rav Moshe Leib Sasseverer was somebody who was oisik all his life in Pidyon Shviim, in trying to collect monies to release people who were unfairly jailed and incarcerated, either because they couldn't come up with rent, but at the end of the day, he was jailed under false pretenses, and he had people who loved him dearly and made sure that he was put out of action. When he was there, he was wondering, you know, why have I been subjected to this? And the story says that Eliyahu HaNavi came himself to Rav Moshe Leib Sasseverer and told him, you are oisik all your life in Pidyon Shviim, in helping people being removed from jail, and you're collecting funds for them, and you're oisik yoimam v'layla for this one quest. But now, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to know what it feels like to be on the other side of the bars. So now you're in jail, and you can really feel what it's like to be a jailbird. You're going to be released eventually, but when you come out, you'll know exactly what you're collecting money for. And on the back of that, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to have this period of time to be the prisoner as opposed to the one who's releasing them. I shall help him as the mitzvah in Shmita. We shall be zeuche to a minna and betuchen in the Ribbono Shel Olam on the greater format. I hope Maggie Chabas.